Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to welcome into the warmth of the studio, Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry.
Boy, howdy, is it warm. Hi, Mike.
And welcome, Charles Hayes. Welcome, Charles.
Thanks, Mike.
And out there, sitting on her back porch with her feet up, the gentle breezes blowing across as she sips a cool drink, Sauce Hollander.
Boy, do I wish. but thanks, Mike.
Okay. Well, the heat is up. I noticed that we've had the first report of a fire up near Tok, which for a while was only about 300 acres and has now grown to apparently about 800 acres. It's the first of the season that's drawn a big response. And just a reminder that even we're past Memorial Day weekend, the big weekend, and yet as the warmth has happened, things have dried out a little bit. There's been occasional rain. There's still the potential for some very serious fires.
Was it a lightning fire?
I'm not sure whether I tell you what, I am sure. I did not see the cause, but it's one of those things where when you watch it over time and you see the numbers begin to grow, I begin to say, I think I have concern. I know that sometimes it's okay. It's designed to go to a particular area and that'll be all right. And sometimes it doesn't. But that's the first one that has had a response where we've had firefighters go and whatever the potential is. So just, it's the beginning of the season. So we mark that in any case.
And there was no lightning in the area, so it is thought to be human caused. It blew up pretty fast. I think it started at just a couple acres.
Right.
Wow.
Went to 300 pretty quick. Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Okay. And that reminds that we are accustomed to having summer come, kind of a change of seasons and so on. And I'd like to draw a line between two points. One, Jeff Lowenfels, in his column in the Alaska Dispatch News, reminds that this is the time, this weekend and the next, the time to put your garden in. And many people here in Alaska have been awaiting this. I know have been watching and wondering if it's going to be warm enough and so on and working on. The reason why I mention that is because I think what we have there is a reminder that there are things we do personally. We put our garden in, we harvest, we weed, we do all that stuff. Meanwhile, off in a far distant place, Washington, D.C., recently a decision was made about a much broader question about climate change and whether what we presently have is going to be a situation that is going to continue on where we can expect this kind of warmth and summer, et cetera, or whether climate change is a reality that we'll be able to see in our own lifetimes or our kids' lifetimes. And I guess I wanted to touch upon that and ask whether, not so much you've got your garden in, but given the response from the North Slope, areas around the coast, from people who have expressed concern about not being part of a worldwide effort to deal with climate change, whether that is something we should pay attention to, or should we just plant our gardens and go about our ways? How's that? Charles seemed to have a reaction to that. Charles?
You know, sitting here thinking about this, my interest in local politics and stuff, I think, is directly related to national politics. And when things are such disarray nationally, I don't pay as much attention to what's going on locally. But that said, one of the missing pieces in all this, I think, is the administration's chief strategist, Stephen Bannon, believes that disruption is power. And what's going on here, there's not a really good argument. These guys, and they know it, that there's not a really good argument for not doing climate change. But the fact that he's got the whole world upset is disruptive, and this is a power play. And if we don't understand it as that, we're going to miss a whole lot of points here.
Okay. Zaz, any addition to Charles' comments?
Well, I guess in answer to your original question, if by staying in our gardens and not flying anywhere, we you know, do our part for climate change, I guess that's a good thing. I don't know. There have been some devil's advocates saying that, you know, given the Trump administration's position on climate change and his appointments to top-level environmental positions, maybe it's for the best that the U.S. pulls out, because the other nations who are more and interested in making significant policy change can do so. And it's also, I heard a fairly striking statistic that despite the population differences between developing countries, I don't even know if India is technically a developing country anymore, but between India and China and the U.S., we still generate, I guess, four times the emissions, I believe, as those countries, just because of our first world lifestyle, I suppose, and industry. And so, I think gardening is a good option at this point.
Okay. Terry, you go in the garden?
Well, I think those are both really good points. I think Charlie makes a good one about Steve Bannon and just doing sort of plays into the whole Trump administration, as everything is just the wow factor and playing to his base, more playing to his base. People that don't understand it, and it's not an everyday thing, don't understand the Paris Agreement, will pat him on the back and say, yeah, you went through with your campaign promise, and that's what it's about. It's always about getting power, keeping power, and this is the way he is keeping power, is playing to his base. I may be not lucky for us, and another, you know, the glass being half full is that really it doesn't really kick in until hopefully someone else is president, because it's a four-year thing. You don't just sign and pick up your marbles and go home. The next time we're officially out is in that 4 years. I think I'm right about that, but you know, basically, he's saying we don't care about the future. What we care about is making money today. And, you know, that, you know, if you don't care about your kids' future and the stewardship of the planet, then you're going to say, yeah, we do all about us. But all about us at some point takes the power away. And he's, you know, succinctly doing that by talking about getting out of NATO, getting out of this, getting out of, and just being an isolist. And we're going to find ourselves now in company with Nicaragua and Syria, which doesn't exactly make us a very powerful group, and we're handing that power over to other countries to lead the charge.
And that there were two aspects of this whole thing, and I think we'll move on. But one was kind of the shaking of heads, looking at what was there about this agreement that restricted the United States. Because in comparison to the Kyoto Agreement, this most recent Paris Agreement had in it pieces that suggested the United States could make its choice about what it was going to do. And there was some real question about just in what way was the United States being harmed by being in the agreement. And people were having trouble following a line of thought that showed specifically by being in an agreement, it was costing the United States whatever. There were large statements made, but the details seemed to be missing. And then in addition to that, the reaction I thought was instructive with a large number of very large corporations who have sometimes been tagged with a polluting label, have said, we have seen the benefit of moving down the line here, and not only those corporations, but cities, states, within the United States, and saying, if the federal government can't get its act together, essentially, we'll do that. And I'm wondering if that's kind of a part of the reaction, and the intention very often with some people is to move action down to the lowest levels possible, to states, to cities, and so on. And that may be part of what you're seeing happening by default if under the present administration the federal government is seemingly incompetent.
But you can't fight this with logic. I mean, this is about disruption and power. And if it makes any sense, instead of planting vegetables this year, I just planted all flowers.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it has anything to do with fact. This is just about the politics of it. And he's confident, and he should be confident, that the people that are support him don't really understand it and don't know the nuts and bolts of that, and they don't know what's on the line for it. All they know is that he has said he's a climate denier, just like he said he was a birther. He can change opinions anytime he wants, and he's forgiven for that. I mean, this is completely uncharted territory with a president. So while it's concerning, I don't know that it should be unexpected. It's sort of par for the course right now.
And they think he's telling it like it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Nate Silver has on his website a article by one of his people that raises the questions exploring politically whether this was a smart move or not, and suggesting that given the large number of people who supported being in the Paris Agreement, that even though a large portion of the president's base might have wanted the U.S. out, what you were giving to that base was something that he had said he was going to do, and it wasn't going to do as much positively there, reinforcing his base, as it was to energize the opposition, which seems to be a rather a large portion of the population of the United States and the world. So it unless there's something beyond that that it moves in the direction of Charles' point, people are basically in the shaking the head moment.
But the public has the retention of a gnat, so it'll be on to something else. I'm really more interested, if you want a long-term perspective, on what our own congregation said. And I think Lisa Murkowski came out pretty strong in saying that she didn't support that. I think
support the withdrawal from
right.
Paris,
and I think that I think Sullivan was much more measured in his approach, kind of sinking his teeth into the military portion of things, which is what he always does. But I think those are the voices you should be paying more attention to, not so much what's going on at the White House.
Well, let's leave that dominating news, which has been all over the place for us, and go to something which is a wee bit closer to home, and that is in the fair city of Juneau. Legislators have been dodging visitors now as the cruise ships pour thousands, tens of thousands of people into the capital city. And there have been some interesting side reports, perhaps of a legislator that spent some time in Hawaii while waiting for action to happen. All kinds of interesting reports. But other than the governor's announcement that he hoped that there would be a decision that was made between the leadership of the Senate and the House that would show some movement forward, I haven't seen anything substantive. Zas, any sense at all that we're closer to a solution to the budget?
None. But it's not my beat, so I
right.
may not have that much to offer.
Yeah, I have gone out and looked again, and unless it's going to be revealed late on Friday afternoon in some way, we're now past the halfway point of the special session. Terry, any indication whatsoever?
Well, I think that the Senate did finally appoint somebody to the conference committee about the House tax bill. So they've appointed a couple members, Olson, Giesel, I think, and Stedman to that. So that's the only action I think that they've taken. But I think it's realistic to think they won't do anything until the end of this session, and then they can put themselves back into another special session. They've done that before, and they may even limit at that point just one thing on it that they can agree upon. But meanwhile, budget notices go out, layoff notices are already in the mail.
Yep. Okay, well, let's turn to potential solutions and also very hot topics. This morning in a conversation with the city manager, Nate Wallace, we touched upon the city of Palmer's view of things like a borough-wide tax or a statewide tax. And Zas, you've looked a little bit at that topic. How about summarizing why it's so complicated?
The sales tax proposal that the borough may have on the ballot?
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's complicated, I guess, is one word for it. Sales taxes have not been popular, at least in the borough. I should say that in terms of on the state level, when I was doing primary interviews, a number of Republican candidates, including Shelley Hughes, said that, you know, I'm not in favor of any tax, but if there has to be one, my constituents seem to back sales tax. And that was a long time ago. But no, on the borough level, there is a move afoot. The school district would like the borough, the assembly, to put a sales tax anywhere from, I think, a 1.5 to a 3% sales tax on the October ballot for a local vote. So, you know, getting a sales tax would assume the assembly puts it on the ballot, which, Terry, you could correct me, but I think given the current makeup of the assembly, it's likely they will forward it to give the people a voice. And I think once the people have a voice, and Terry, again, maybe you have a different perspective, but I think they'll vote it down.
Yeah, well, I think they have to. I think by code they have to have the people vote on it. They can't put the tax in. So,
right.
But they,
right.
I think
they
it'll.
Just
I don't
not do it and not have a sales tax.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't see any real pushback from anybody to put it out there. I think it's a very big hill to climb. I think the positive side of it is when the borough and the school district have gotten together on other financial measures like the bonding and the new schools. Bonding for that and the rec bonds, they were successful in getting the public to come through. But this is a different slope because, and the reality of it is, it's not can't be designated for education. It can just be designated in the general fund with the intent to offset, to feed into education. And even if it happens, it's not going to save jobs this year because it would go into effect after. And then they also have the two big clouds hanging over them, one being that Anchorage doesn't have a sales tax, making it sort of a disadvantage to the small business owners here, which we depend upon, and the cities, depending on how they weigh in on it. And also just not knowing if the state's going to slap one on, too. That could happen also. So there's so many unknowns. And unfortunately, the clock's ticking, and they have to make up their mind about at least putting it out there. For an October ballot, but I think you'll see it on the ballot. Now, how that plays out really depends on a whole bunch of different moving pieces, in my estimation. But back to you, Zas, if you've got a better insight into that.
I do have, I guess, what would be breaking news from the governor's office. There's a press release that Walker just issued, and for listeners, it's about 11 in the morning on Friday, that given the lack of movement in Juneau, and the fact that yesterday the potential for a government shutdown was kind of publicized without a budget compromise July 1, the governor, and this is a press release from the governor's office, this is not a news story, but
right.
That after meeting with leadership, House and Senate majority and minority leaderships, a government shutdown is unacceptable, compromise is essential, so my team and I have begun work on a compromise package from concepts currently on the table, and intend to present the compromise to all four caucuses next week.
Oh, so the governor is taking the lead on this by sitting down, which normally does not happen. If there's anything like normal, the legislature is left to come up with it. And after my understanding, the process typically has been that the governor early on presents a budget. The legislature then does the Senate and House versions of things, and the governor is really not part of that discussion. He doesn't sit down with people. He doesn't go to the sessions. He may convey information about what he will or will not support in a veto sense, but then the budget comes to him, and he has a chance to do things to it. But so this marks a departure from that. Is that correct, Zas?
Yes. Yeah. I'm not in Juneau all the time, but this feels like something different.
Okay. Right now at this moment, I am encouraged that there's anything, and I applaud the governor and those members of the leadership of the two houses being willing to listen to what's going to happen. Perhaps it's getting hotter there as well. Okay. Well, we know that the borough and the school board, the borough assembly and the school board are awaiting the results of all of this. The school district in particular, it has taken steps. It has presented, just to remind listeners, a series of scenarios depending upon the amount of money that flows through the borough to the school district. And it looks like that is not going to be known until close to the end of this special session at the earliest. So we are in waiting status in many different ways. Terry, any other comments about topics that come to your mind at this present time as we're...
The school district is putting outsourcing back on the table. Sounds like they've asked to see if NANA will still stand by the contract that they've gotten, a couple school board members and the superintendent. So that will be back there in front of them again. I don't know how that will go, but that should be a topic of conversation. You know, I think everybody's just waiting day in and day out for another shoe to drop, either, you know, on the federal level. There's a lot going on with healthcare. I'm going to be in D.C. all next week, have a better idea after talking to all of them about it. But there's a lot of reason for Alaskans to be very worried about the future of their healthcare and the cost, particularly to seniors and people of low income. And a lot of different angles on that. And you never know what's going to come out of the White House next, unless Charlie has a direct line to the White House.
So even though, to sum up, as we're finishing up this edition of Valley Edition, even though we are somewhat removed from some of the areas of power, some distance from Europe, some distance from Washington, D.C., some distance from China, for that matter, we are not so far from North Korea. And we've been mentioned, along with North Korea, as a place where there are threatening missiles. So Alaska becomes, even at our sort of removed location, a target in some respects. And certainly the issues that we've mentioned, both climate change, healthcare changes, all of those things are likely to dramatically affect life here. And so there's reason to not only plant your garden, but perhaps to contact.
Care about the weeds in your neighbor's garden?
Right. Care about, if you can't go to Washington, D.C. in person, then there are ways to communicate. And to communicate not only to Washington, D.C., but to Juneau. As the legislators continue to work on this, to convey your opinion about what you would like to see happen. So with that, I want to thank participants this week for coming in. Thank you, Terry, for coming in to the studio.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Charles, for coming in to the studio. And also, Zaz, for taking the time to call in.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay.